ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय किं वा कृताज्ञेषा अघम् अत्यमर्षि भीमो इवाद् दीर्घतमम् व्यमुञ्चत् यसङ्ग्रे हाथम् रण भूर्न सेहे मार्गम् गदायश शरथो विचित्रम् किं वा घृताघेष्वगमत्यमर्षि विमोहि वद्धीर्गतमं व्यमुञ्चत् यस्याङ्ग्रिपाथं रणभूर्णसेहे मार्गं गदायश्चरथो विचित्रम् किं वा घृताघेष्वगमत्यमर्षि किमो हि वद्भिर्गतमं व्यमुञ्चत् यस्याङ्ग्रिपाथं रणभूर्णसेहे मार्गं गदायश्चरथो विचित्रम् किं वा घृताघेष्वगमत् अत्यमर्षि भीमो हि वद्भिर्गतमं व्यमुञ्चत् यस्याङ्ग्रिपाथं रणभूर्णसेहे मार्गं गदायश्चरथो विचित्रम् किं वेदर् वा ऐदर् कृता प्रफार्म् Agheshu unto the sinners. Agham, angry. Ati amarshi, unconquerable. Bhima, ahivata, like a cobra. Dhirgatamam, long cherished. Vyamunchat has released. Yasya, whose? Angripatam, putting on the steps. Ranabhu, the field of battle. Na, could not. Sehe, tolerate. Margham, the path. Gadayah, by the clubs. Charata, playing. Vichitram, wonderful. Translation. Please tell me whether the unconquerable Bhima, who is like a cobra, has released his long-cherished anger upon the sinners. The field of battle could not tolerate even the wonderful playing of his club when he stepped on the path. Purport. Vidura knew the strength of Bhima. Whenever Bhima was on the battlefield, his steps on the path and the wonderful playing of his club were unbearable for the enemy. Powerful Bhima did not take steps against the sons of Dhritarashtra for a long time. Vidura's inquiry was whether he had yet released his anger, which was like that of a suffering cobra. When a cobra releases its venom after long cherished anger, its victim cannot survive. So Vidura here is approaching Uddhava to inquire about from him about the welfare of the dynasty, his family members. And now he's discussing about Bhima. And so we see in this is that it's not just, you know, a simple hi, how are you, or how is this one or that one, but it's very specific. What is the actual nature of somebody? What is their mood? What is important for them? So this is a very... Then you can tell that this is an intimate discussion. Discussion with between persons who actually have some feeling and affection for each other. Otherwise, he would just say, you know, how is everybody like that? But he's being very specific. And in that, the questions are also specific to the person. So Bhima is known as being very powerful, a great fighter, and specifically with the club. And it's also known as he is a Kshatriya, then will harbor anger. But this anger, as you notice, is upon sinners. It's not just any anger. This is not just jealous anger. This is not just anger because of his own false ego. No, other just very common anger. But this anger is actually that someone is wrong. Right? They are kings. Their duty is to follow the Dharma. Their duty is to establish the Dharma. And so those who are behaving in an inappropriate way, then this is to be considered. This is to be dealt with. So then we can see here that his anger is not just that he's an angry person, right? Sometimes we think someone who's always angry and likes to fight, that this person is therefore a Kshatriya, right? But anger is the mode of ignorance. So we see here is it's not just he's an angry person. No. His anger is in connection with the improper performance of duties. Right? So then, that anger is what is needed to chastise or correct. But then we see as the method he'll use also is according to scripture. Does that make sense? Means this equation has to be taken fully. We have to be very careful about using things just how much we like. What's favorable for us and what's not favorable, then we drop. You know, the example is given of the half a hen. Is the front half is not so good because it eats a lot, makes a lot of noise, and, you know, pecks people and that. But the back half is okay because it delivers eggs, so there's some profit here. So here, then Bhima is upset with persons because of the Shastras, but he also then corrects it and deals with it according to Shastra. Right? Because, and we see here is that he's saying it's a long time, with his long cherished anger. So then that means that even this anger, even though we have it, that does not give us the right that just because we have it, therefore it can be vented. Right? Let us say our stomach's bad. And it's full of gas. So we could say my stomach's full of gas. It's my right to let it out. But in cultured society, would we say yes? No. So like that, that is how you tell someone cultured, a child. They pass urine anywhere, stool anywhere, they make noise, they belch, they do all kinds of things. And, you know, if they're real small, then it's considered cute. But if they're a little bigger, then it's the older they get, the less cute it becomes. So then they're considered mature by how they're able to control these urges. Right? So anger is an urge. So this we see here is Bhima, even though he is, it's compared here like a snake, right? A cobra. So this anger, I mean, cobras, basically, they're just made out of air. Because air is movement. Air gets things done. And so that means then something must be performed. Something must happen. But it is being reserved. It's not the correct time. Right? Means there were so many opportunities, Bhima could have pulled out his club any time and smashed Duryodhana over the head. Right? And we could have said, yes, he deserved it. And probably no one would have said much. You know, there might have been a little grumbling here and there. But as they were grumbling, you know, they would make sure that they didn't grumble too loud, otherwise Bhima would hit them over the head with the club also, as they kind of like slinked off, you know, out of the palace. Does it make sense? Right? So now that meant that Bhima, he didn't have the permission of his elder brother. The situation was not such. The complications of the whole social system, that then so many years later only he had the opportunity to let this out, right? So this anger is starting from when he was small, right? When he was very small, Duryodhana tried to kill him, right? They were just kids. They hadn't even gone to Gurukul yet, right? So they were quite young. So from that time, right? And Krishna was like their equal. And, you know, we've heard that on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna was 125. So this was before they went to Gurukul. So at least 100 years or more. Right? More than 100 years he was containing this. Therefore it becomes something notable, right? Someone is so upset with somebody, but they contain that for 100 years until the proper opportunity is there according to Shastra. No, not just that the guy's turned around and now it's time to bonk him over the head when he's not looking. Alright? Does that make sense? I have a computer, I have an email connection, right? I have an email address, and I have a send button. Therefore it gives me my right. Right? No, not like that. Here he is able to control. So even though we may say Bhima is the most passionate of the brothers, he's the most angry, he's the one always willing for a fight, but we see that his fighting is still only according to religious principles. So that means his anger arises due to breakage of religious principles, but his anger is also expressed only in connection with religious principles. That's complete. That's balanced. That's a balanced person. Right? That is what the Vedic culture is there to bring about, is the balance. Because everybody is an individual. Everybody has their own nature, their own abilities, their own needs. And that should be according to one's karma fulfilled. Right? That's why the living entity is here, to fulfill his desires. When his desires are fulfilled, he's happy. When he's happy, he generally tends to be more broad-minded. Right? Does that make sense? When he's not happy, then it narrows. If it really becomes unhappy, then sometimes he becomes introspective, so he might get benefit that way. So we see that when they're happy or when they're introspective, then there is some progress for the living entity. So therefore, the Vedic society tries to arrange that the actual needs of every living entity is fulfilled according to their position. And in this way, a satisfied society tends more towards loftier principles. Right? You can be more generous when you're happy. Or, because the material world is a material world, there will always be some problem because of our previous performed activities, then there will be the chance for introspection. And that way also, then we will try to situate ourselves better on the transcendental path. Right? So now in this, every individual has their rights because they have a nature. That nature has a position in the Lord's creation. In the Lord's creation, then all the living entities are connected to Him. And we see the Varnashram system is then manifest from His body. So that means they each have their thing. The feet have the right to walk. Right? The arms have their right to move things, protect. The stomach to digest. The head to see, give direction, to speak, to eat. Right? So these things are inherent. But that's half of Varnashram. It's what is the individual rights. The other half are what is everybody else's rights. Right? I may have my rights, but my rights can only be expressed in such a way that they do not conflict with someone else's rights. Does that make sense? Otherwise, you don't have society. A society that does not consider these two things technically is not a society. It's not a social structure. It's animal society. Animals just, it's purely subjective. Whatever is good for them, that's what they do at that moment. Of course, Krishna so arranged it that what they want and what they can do is already properly arranged according to their nature. So therefore, it works. Right? But the human being is given the choice that they can act like humans or act like animals. So here, it's not that this strong behavior is subhuman. No, Bhima is considered a great personality. But we see that even that his power is controlled. That is human society. When it's properly controlled, then it goes up. Right? The force is greater. Because it's directed. Right? If you just have water, it comes out of the spout and goes all over. But if you direct it, it goes somewhere. Does that make sense? So, therefore, this kind of control, this sense control, this restriction, then is what actually makes a society function. And the opposite, where it's just laissez-faire, and everybody's opinion is as good as anybody else's, this is animal society. Because if here we see, like Bhima, if it's not based on Shastra, it doesn't have any meaning. It's illusory. It's very real to us because it's us. We have bought into our conditioned nature and we think it's very important. But it's still illusory. We have to remember that as devotees. That even though, yes, we heard this 30 years ago as a new bhakta, it still applies today. The Vedic principle is you start teaching from the top. The top are the principles that remain. They always are there. Right? Chant Hare Krishna and you'll be happy. That's always there. Now how you'll chant in different situations, that may vary. Right? If you chant japa, that's one way. You're doing sankirtan, that's another. You're doing bhajan, that's another. You're doing kirtan in the temple for the deities, that may be another way. You know, if you're in the bath, then you may chant in a different way. Right? But the principle remains. So these principles are actually not the kid stuff. That's the adult stuff. The details are actually the kid stuff. Right? But generally it's not talked about because our egos are so big. Right? But technically, details are for the idiots. Even though they're very technical and seemingly you need a lot of immaterial intelligence to understand it, but it's just that. It's material intelligence. But spiritual intelligence means you understand the principle, you can always apply it. Right? You understand I'm servant of God, therefore I should be only engaged in His service, so, and the process is chanting Hare Krishna, then you get Hare Das Thakur. All he does is chant Hare Krishna. Right? We will put him at the top. Right? At least when we're sitting in a situation like this. But when we leave this room and we go back to our house, and the flood of the so-called reality of our material situation floods in on us again, do we actually put Hare Das Thakur on the top? Right? Or is it now there's so much reality and things that we have to consider that actually that's not practical? Right? Then it actually, if you think about it, then it's for fanatics, it's for kids. Right? Does that make sense? You see how we spin this? It's very subtle. So, according to the Vedas, the simple, pure things, that's what they do in the spiritual world. That's the top. But as we become complex in our perverted consciousness, it becomes very complicated. And a complicated situation needs a lot of technique and skill to function in. Right? The more entangled, the more skill required. But now if we look at it, we look at it from one side, yes, it's intelligent that we have so much skill. Yes, that's there. But at the other side is, are we intelligent that we have to have that much skill? If we're really intelligent, we'd just be chanting Hare Krishna. Does that make sense? So we always have to be careful of these two seemingly diverging paths. Right? That the more complex it is, the more mature I am, the bigger my ego can be, the more of an adult I am. When in actuality, it's not necessarily like that. It's done like that. The Vedic society does that, and it supports that because of the false ego only. Right? Just like the older you get, the longer you're around, the more you feel you're important. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, age is an important element of respect. Right? Because people who are older really think they're more respectable. They sincerely think so. So why bother them? Right? Don't bother the ignorant. Right? Therefore they're respected. Same way with power. I have more power. I have more influence. My position is higher. Therefore we don't disturb them. We respect them. Family members, because they are family, right? Just happen to be. Right? And so, therefore, they're respected. Right? Or someone's worked very hard at a skill. Right? But that skill is actually just their nature to do. But now they want profit from that by responding to their skill. And so, therefore, they're respected for that. So all these stages are there because of the false ego. Because the material existence means false ego. Right? That's how we get into the material world, and that's how we stay. So this false ego then, therefore we consider the more and more complex it is. So therefore very simple things, like I'm not this body, we're just supposed to be body, mind, and words and engaged in Krishna's service. These very simple, simple things that we've heard as new bhaktas over and over and over again, therefore tend to go to the wayside because they're simple. Right? And more complex things, it's just like here, we got here, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But if we have something more like, seven principles that somebody who's successful does, then that seems more elaborate, that's more developed. Right? Understand? So, but actually, if you think about it, what is it? Seven principles of successful people. That means they're already successful, already doing it. They're not buying the book. They're not going to the seminars. They're doing it. So then, who's the smart one? Who is the stupid one? The smart ones are doing it. The stupid ones are reading the book. Does that make sense? So this is something that goes down well in the Vedic culture, because humility is considered an important element. It may not always be practiced. We may be overwhelmed. That's understood. That's why etiquette and everything is there, because we're habituated to so much to dealing with the material energy and having reactions by that. By habit, we will get disturbed. But that's not a problem, because that's why etiquette is there. That's why the process is there to get us over that. But, how you say? So, that being there, they know that giving the principles is actually for intelligent people. Then, detail is because we're not so intelligent, right? It's Kali Yuga. That's why the books are written down. Previously, they're spoken. Right? It means Bhagavad Gita is written down in the Kali Yuga. Right? We say Vyasadeva wrote it. But we see Nanda Baba, before it was written, talking about in the Bhagavad Gita it says. Right? Because it's an eternal scripture. Does that make sense? But because we're not so smart now it has to be written. Details have to be given. So that's not a problem. Because in Kali Yuga, we are these stupid ones, right? The smart ones already got out in Satya Yuga, right? Right? The ones that didn't get out then, you know, they're still left here, right? You know, so the winners of the being in the material world stupid contests are, you know, the winners are here. Yeah. Does this make sense? So we have to keep in mind that these simple principles are actually what must be in the forefront of our mind. All the day-to-day details of life, that's there. It will take up a large amount of our consciousness. That's not the problem. Right? The problem is if that large amount is not connected to the essence. Right? You connect it, then it has some value. Then even our day-to-day life has some value in Krishna consciousness. But if it's not connected through these simple principles, then it doesn't have any meaning. It seems to have meaning. It's important right now. We get that money, we take care of the family, we educate, we do all these different things. But on the mundane platform, give it 20 years and then see if it actually had any meaning. Right? When your kid's out the door, hasn't written you in 2 years, then you evaluate all that hard work. Then you see, was it really worth it? Right? Does that make sense? So, like that, you have to look and see. In other words, if we want to, reality is, you know, they have now reality shows and everything. So reality is a very popular thing. So, yes, let's get down to actual reality, not just popular reality. Vox populi reality. That's nice for a conversation, right? Keeps the bile moving, has something that the two of you can talk about. Because actually you have nothing to talk about. As a relationship, you don't have really anything there. So therefore, if you take a third party and can bash them, then hey, we have a common enemy, so therefore we're allies. It's a standard political move. Everybody does it. But the Vedic is trying to take it deeper, that you actually have a relationship, but what's it based on? Right? It's based on your individual nature, their individual nature, and what is the natural common way that those two natures interact. Right? So we see here that Bhima is an individual, and Duryodhana is an individual, because here you just say the sinners. Everybody knows who the sinners are. And so then it's just until it's the proper situation. Does that make sense? So, So these simple things here, see, we'll take it as a story. Okay, here Vidura is asking this to Uddhava. Okay, great. Now back to real life. But actually, if you're intelligent, this is real life. Right? This is real life. This teaches you how to behave, how to act. Right? Why do we upset others with our anger? Why do others upset us with their anger? Right? Because we don't follow what's being given here in this verse. It's that simple. Right? It's that simple. Duryodhana was not in any way, you never find anywhere that at the Battle of Kurukshetra he was upset with Bhima for fighting or expressing that anger. Right? He was not even upset that Bhima tried to kill him, but, you know, he broke his thighs. He was upset that why he broke the thighs. That's against the rules. But do you ever remember him being upset that why is he upset with me? No. Because he waited for the right time. Then the relationship was complete. Right? Duryodhana therefore can understand, yes, I've done so many things wrong, and I got away with it, and now Bhima has, you know, brought it around in a circle, and now it's been revenged. I can't complain. He may not have liked his method, but the anger part, this is what we're discussing here. So these are practical. That's why the Bhagavatam is here. It's not theoretical. It's not just intellectual. It's real. And that's why it's here. That's why it's the top shastra. The Vedas are here to teach us. Prabhupada says the Vedas are like the manual how to operate the material world. So the essence of that manual is called the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that means whatever is there in all the other shastras, the Dharma, the Artha, the Kama, the Moksha shastras, are all in here. And in their perfection, because each one of them is connected to bhakti. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, so we need to start taking, means if we haven't, we're just, this is a very generic statement. But we need to take the Bhagavatam seriously. It is our book. Every line has their book. Right? Like the Shankarites, we think of as Vedanta Sutra. Right? Those who worship Ramachandra, it's a Ramayana. Right? For most, your general, you know, Hindus, it'll be Mahabharata or Bhagavad Gita. Right? But our book, in our line, is Srimad Bhagavatam. All books are actually written on Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the book. It is our book. And if you go to another sampradaya or other places, they'll ask you, what's your book? It's just standard. It means we may or may not know that. You know, I mean, the homies, you know, they're on, you know, how you say, walking down, you know, Fifth Avenue may not ask you, you know, oh man, what's your book? You know, they may not say that, but the whole point is this is our book. Right? So that means everything we do and understand can be seen in this book. And then, to fill that out, all the other Vedic literatures are there for where we don't catch it. The detail is given. Alright? Does this make sense? Where we're bringing... Yeah, okay. Are there any questions on this?
Not only philosophical aspect, but
Why would Duryodhana die from broken thighs when, you know, their whole medical science and their systems were such as even greater than now? See, we have something that, here's another fun thing. It's another one of these reverses. Is that even though we'll take it that the Vedic culture is dry and the modern is very moist with feelings and emotions, if we look at it, actually it's completely the opposite. The modern culture is the driest, nastiest thing there is around. Like that. I mean, unless, of course, you consider dog culture to be the supreme, like that. Or maybe pigs. I mean, Animal Farm was pigs, right? So then, you have an element that we don't see today. We read about it, but we read about it because in those days it was real. And nowadays people are so afraid to invest in emotion because of mistrust that therefore emotions and feelings don't actually run very deep. Right? It looks like it. You know, you take a little bit of water and run it over a few pebbles. It looks like a lot's happening. But there's no depth to it, though there's a lot happening, splashing and moving and like that. But then you take a river, it's moving, and it may look very still, but it's very deep and very, very powerful. So we're so used to seeing that there's some immediate, just, how you say, self-centered reaction to a situation, and that's considered good. And, you know, means it's not ignorance. There's some activity, because only in activity can we actually appreciate relationship, that therefore this kind of interaction is considered good or standard. Rather than someone like Bhima is very deep and therefore can control that anger until it's actually the right time in his relationship with Duryodhana to express it. Does that make sense? So now, that depth of emotion is so much that it creates life, it creates death. You understand? So, there's much more happening here than just he was hit by a club. Right? I mean, we can go into other elements about the, you know, the life force and everything that's there, that these things are so powerful they can upset someone else's. But that's another thing of metaphysics. But here is just the element of, he has just come out, the Pandavas are in the forest, he couldn't tolerate that they had half the kingdom. Right? And they were given the worst half. Kuru Jungala was actually a place that was so barren, nothing lived there. Right? Our standard desert, it's full of life, though we don't necessarily see it, but it's under the sand, and if a little bit of rain comes and all kinds of things pop up, all kinds of plants, there's a lot happening there. But Kuru Jungala was, a curse had been there that there was nothing living there. And that was what was given to the Pandavas. And still then they created Indraprastha and became emperors of the world. So Duryodhana couldn't handle that, let alone that he has just come out there with 11 Aukshahinis. And the Pandavas only had 7. And 640 million people died in 18 days. And the Pandavas are on top. So someone like Duryodhana, that's what'll kill him. Right? Here's a medium for it. He has broken thighs, so he sits there and, you know, bleeds and this and that. That doesn't matter so much for Kshatriyas. Arrows go straight through them and they just hold on to the flagpole for a few moments till they get their composure back and keep on fighting. Right? And if their force is not stronger than the person that's sending it, then yes, they get killed. But if not, then they're still there. Right? So here he's been completely emotionally devastated by the whole situation. So there are no allies. There is no Bhishma. There is no Drona. There is no Kripa. There is no Karna. Right? All he has is Ashvatthama. You know, Kritavarma, who's not even on his... Technically, he's only there for the battle. But otherwise, he's from, you know, Dwarka. You know? And who's the third one? Kripacharya. And he only knows weaponry. He doesn't know celestial weapons. Right? The Pandavas know celestial weapons. So what's Kripa going to do? Right? So he's lost everything. All his brothers... So then, therefore, emotionally, what's to go on for? You know what I'm saying? So here's the situation that he could become seriously, you know, contemplative or depressed or just real about the situation, and then he'll just move on. You know what I'm saying? So the emotions are so strong, he won't eat, he won't drink. So even if he does die from that, he'll basically fast to death. Does that make sense? Yeah. So here we're dealing, Vedic culture means we're dealing with real emotion. So we have to always remember, just because we've completely misread and misapplied the Vedic culture as given to us by Srila Prabhupada, doesn't mean that it's wrong. It means that it's real and Prabhupada's trying his best to wake us up to it. But when you have a bunch of fatheads, what do you expect in 11 years? You know what I'm saying? They spread the mission, they establish themselves in Krishna consciousness. Every devotee has the philosophy down, and which is the most important, which makes them stand out from basically all other groups. Because they actually know what it is, where they're going. The process, everything. But culture is something that you're developing over a long time. See, transcendental is natural to the soul. So in a moment, that can be gained and understood, because you're dealing with the chit potency. So as soon as it's given, it's empowered, then it exists. So you can implant the topmost philosophy in the newest person in the shortest possible time. But culture, that's something that we've been dealing with for unlimited lifetimes in the material world. And we have habits that may be affecting us back so many births. That's slower to change. That's why what we're saying is the higher is simpler, the lower is more complex. So the Varnashram system is a system how to understand how to bring that conditioned nature as close as possible to the spiritual nature, which is the natural nature of the soul. In other words, the natural spiritual situation of the soul. And the material situation we find ourselves in, that we want to try to make it as close as possible. Does that make sense? In other words, if you have the spiritual culture and the reflection of that spiritual culture in the material world, then if you bring it as close to that the reflection as possible, that's much easier to see the connection with the philosophy. It doesn't have to be. But if it is, it's nice. It's easier. Like, if people are nice, it's actually easier. But we say everybody should be nice, but okay, that's great. How is one nice? What is niceness based on? Niceness is based on accepting everybody for who they are. Then you can be nice. Right? But otherwise, to just smile and all that depends that your day went well so you can do that. But if your day didn't go well, how are you going to be nice? Right? So Vedic goes beyond that, because it's known that everybody doesn't necessarily have a good day. Right? We're dealing with previous karmas and so many people themselves trying to behave properly, that everyone makes mistakes. So, therefore, there must be a system, a social science, in which I have activities that I perform, and because of that, then relationships go on nicely, right? Isn't it? So that's what it's for. If we've misunderstood and misapplied it, doesn't mean that it is any less good. Prabhupada said a live elephant or dead elephant is worth a lakh of rupees. Alive, it can do so much work. Dead, its bones are made out of ivory. You can still sell it for a lakh. So even a seemingly dead Vedic culture is still more valuable than anything anybody else has got. But unless we have an understanding of that or faith in that, we're not going to be able to find it. You can't find something you have no faith in. Right? Right? People who have had faith in something and were committed to it, they were successful. Right? You hear of businessmen started business 5 times, failed all the time, all 4 of them, and the 5th one only, then it happened, and then they became very wealthy. You know, so many people in any field, in the arts, in the sciences, in politics, they had a vision and they worked for it. And because they kept to it, then they got the result. Does that make sense? But if we've tried it once, it didn't work, seemingly, and then we give it up, that's not called much vision. You can't call that a mature person. Of course, their ego demands that they be called mature, and they're being realistic, but in the Bhagavatam class, we have the, how you say, kind of like the, what would it be, the... You're given the... It's not exactly a right. It's a privilege, yes, that we can actually point it out and point out how actually they're completely, totally foolish. Right? And that's top to bottom. Anybody who says the Vedic culture doesn't work doesn't know what they're talking about, and we don't care who they are. Because Prabhupada believed in it, Prabhupada followed it, and Prabhupada made it work. And everywhere he went in the world, people liked him. So even all the things we're jumping up and down about now, being nice, being good, being this, being that, Prabhupada did it using the Vedic culture. So that means it works. So if we can't make it work, then we should reassess, maybe I didn't use it right. And then if we say, I can't use it, then yes, say, all I can do is follow, you know, the conditioning I grew up with from my mother. Acknowledge that, yes, then we'll accept that and move on. But if you try to put any philosophy on it, or try to put yourself in a good position because of your false ego, you're only cheating yourself and cheating others. And according to Manasamhita, someone who, how you say, lives a bogus philosophy, gets the reaction for it. Well, that's standard karma. But someone who professes it gets 100 times the reaction. Therefore, better to keep one's mouth shut. It's safer. Yeah? Okay. Okay, so we'll end here because the time is up. And if anyone wants to continue with questions, we'll continue after 5 minutes after the class. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
I really needed to do that.
Oh,
thanks.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you, thank you.
How do you want to do it?
Yeah, at 11 o'clock. Maybe it's 10. We'll see how long we'll go here. At least we'll end up by 10. And then from there, we'll head over there. So then it comes to 10:15.
Okay. My mother just coming for the class today.
Who? Which one?
With the boys.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. I don't know what was that.
Okay.
Thank you. securing a front seat. Yeah, no. Let it clear out and then we can. Otherwise, it's need a few moments for everybody. Yeah. That takes a few minutes, everyone, you know. Yeah.
I see one point where you were concentrating the mother, you were so emotional that makes a man die and then somebody dead. Ashwatthama also, you know, Duryodhana was so feeling so bad that he asked Ashwatthama to go and kill all the Pandavas and their sons so their descendants will go on.
He said he would kill the Pandavas, but Duryodhana was very upset that they killed his son, because he said the Pandavas are who he has anger for, it's not his son. He's not. See, Duryodhana is just attached. He's not nasty. Because the point is they are Kurus and the dynasty should go on. He just doesn't want the Pandavas doing it, but their sons can do it. So Duryodhana, that's what also made him upset, is that they killed the five sons of Draupadi. They were the ones that would have been the future kings. Then the Kurus, because otherwise now the Kurus won't be in charge. Right? If nobody's left, that means another dynasty will take over. So he was culture. He was just as envious. Specifically Arjuna. You know, Bhima. Bhima, like personally Arjuna, because he knew he was.
Because I had to do the us.
No, he didn't ask. He was upset. Okay, so we'll continue.
Okay.
Yeah, and just see that, you know, there's something to sit on there for downstairs, you know, the regular class.
Yes, just the
yeah, set it up now for, you know, whatever time it is, 10.
How many are there?
I heard there's like 15 or 20. You can ask Manjari over there next to the door. She'll know. She's arranging it.
Okay.
For questions, we're going to ask questions officially. Yes, sir. I want to ask you a question. So it's kind of all those three together.
Well, the first two are sort of preliminary, you know, comments.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully, what would you see is the most? Would the early marriage be one of those? Or?
Oh, okay. So the question is that in dealing means it was inspired by someone had asked Lord Buddha that when the Buddhist take over the world, or if he saw taking over the world, what would he see as the most important thing to do to establish? So then his reply was is that everybody should act actually according to their station. If they're Shudras, they act like it. If they're Brahmins, they act like it. Whatever they are, they act like that. You know, so that you don't have any mixes. The importance of that is that then it's very clear what your relationship is, right? Let us say you have a relationship with somebody and you're very comfortable to see them. You're very comfortable to interact. But let's say something goes wrong. Now you're reluctant actually to see them or interact with them, right? And that's based on that you don't actually know what the relationship is, where it stands now. So you don't actually know how to open. What would be the medium through which you would discuss? Because points that were very important to you before suddenly may be points of contention or basis for going into contention. You know, it means it itself is not inherently contentious, but it could spark that element that was. So there's a doubt in the relationship. So that means then it stagnates the interaction. So that's why it's so important in the Vedic culture that it's clear what everybody does, you know, one's position. But that's external, because it means the principle remains is that it's very clear. We're devotees, we act as devotees. So the problem has not been leaders didn't act as leaders, gurus not as gurus, sannyasis as sannyasis, temple presidents as temple presidents. That will be the natural or easiest to identify form. But there's something more underlying it that is actually the principle. Right? It means, let's say leadership, temple president means he protects the devotees. Administration means protection. So actually the problem is the lack of protection, not the particular detail of the lack of protection. You know, okay, at 9 o'clock at night during the rain, you and your whole family were thrown out on the street and told to beat it. You know, because you were, you know, grumbling about the temple administration. So the detail is you were thrown out on the road. No, but the real point is protection. Even if you were to be thrown out on the road, you're a devotee, so it has to be thrown out on the road in a proper way. You know, in other words, they should have, you know, arranged that you're either, if they want to arrange, you go to some other place, but at least then they should have, you know, helped you arrange the stuff, put you in a vehicle, and drove you off somewhere that you can get to wherever you have to get. You know, that's proper. I saw one temple president, he had a temple that was very small and very hard to maintain. So he would only keep X amount of devotees in it. And if somebody just showed up, he would pay the money to send them to another temple. As soon as they came to the temple, as soon as he saw them, you know, after the appropriate time, after, you know, whatever it is, the Mangal Artik or the class or Prashad, he'd call them into the office and say, what are you doing here? Oh, it's just, you know, I heard, I was just going, you know, where are you going from here? Oh, I'm heading to this place. So he'd just pull out the money and said, you know, the next train's at this time. Right? And then 3 months later, you know, the person's coming back from that place and then showing up again. And you give him the money to send him off to the next place. So I asked him once, this is not you, why are you giving the money? You know, he says, because if he stays here, then there'll be a disturbance. So there'll be less disturbance if I pay the money. You know, so that was an economic interpretation of the principle of taking care, of the protection. You know, because the person was like that. They were a big, you know, collector and money man. So they view it through that. But the principle was you take care. Also, you can see that because at the time they had probably the best temple prashad in the movement at the time. It was probably one of the cleanest temples. Everyone was probably the best dressed. They had some of the nicest temple programs. He would fly people in from all over the place, you know, for classes and kirtans and stuff like this. You know, I'm talking back in the 70s. You know, so then, you know, the devotees there were very satisfied. So the detail is not actually, you know, so that was a tangent. The main point is it's the principle. Brahmins study and teach. Okay, so now let's go, you're saying what's the most important thing to establish? I would say this would be my understanding, is that if there's a general, acceptance that the Vedic culture is based on eternal principles, and establishment of those eternal principles, which are actually quite easy, because they're universal principles, that if you start from there and then expand out to detail, then you can establish Vedic culture. And here, when we're saying Vedic culture, then we should define that. Here we're defining Vedic culture, meaning that lifestyle or value system, practically applied value system that is based on the scriptures, that has been given to us by Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, that's purpose is to elevate us back to Godhead. Does that make sense? That's Vedic culture. Yeah. So technically the term for it, because Vedic means that which follows the Vedas. Right? So because you have that which is directly on the Vedas, that's Vedic. That which is coming from the Vedas is Agamas. So then you get the Pancharatra, you get Tantra, you get various methods. So the actual term is Sanatan Dharma. That we've seen used quite regularly by Srila Prabhupada, because that means the main thing, is, the essential thing is, what is the inherent nature of everything? Right? The eternal nature of everything. So of that, the most important, of course, is the eternal nature of Godhead and the living entity. Right? And the internal potency. Okay. That's the most important. But because of our material situation, then the nature of the material world also becomes important. Therefore, the Upanishad says, vidyam cha, vidyam cha. Studying knowledge and ignorance side by side. So then, what is the inherent nature? So, means the varnashram, means the physical and metaphysical form of it is based on material energy. How the material energy functions. The modes have their specific nature, and the combination of those modes and have specific qualities. So that's why a Brahman is a particular combination of the modes. Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa, they're all particular combinations. And those principles are eternal. Because they're manifest in material energy, they're temporarily manifest. But the principle of what is a Brahmachari or a Grihastha, that's eternal. Because they have it in the spiritual world. So, if it's understood as that we're learning varnashram from the inside out, that it's not an economic situation, system. Economics is one part of five, right? Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, and bhakti. Of all of them, bhakti is the most important because of the eternal, of the Sanatana Dharma, it's the one that's always manifest. So therefore it's superior to Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, which are temporarily manifest. Right? So if you take these five Purusharthas, and what is the natural balance of them? For any particular condition, then it works. For devotees, it's all centered around bhakti being the central, which is the actual form of it. Daiva Varnashram is the actual real form of it, of the Varnashram system. But it's such that the Daiva Varnashram system, it can interface with both the spiritual culture and the material. Because basically all it is spiritual culture being followed in a material situation. Right? It means the spiritual world, you have a spiritual body in a spiritual environment and you perform the spiritual activity. Material world, you have material facilities, but you perform the spiritual activity. Right? In the same spiritual consciousness. So it's actually the bridge between the two. But so within the society of devotees, it becomes much easier. But then you have to look at it from the principles. If you want, I mean, basically you're keeping it basically very close to the principles. You only add a little bit of detail because devotees still have some material needs, so you only add how much it needs for that, and that's all. So you're adding very little. It's basically like Pancharatra with a touch more of with the Varnashram. Like that. Because Pancharatra already includes Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa, and Brahmins. It doesn't include Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. That's the only thing missing from the Pancharatric system. So then you just have to add that little bit, though that's quite complex, you know. But it's still, it's, in reality, it's only a small portion. So then, if you want to interface with the outside world, or deal with devotees' material desires that are greater than just, let's say, the temple devotee, a full-time temple devotee, though he may be a grihastha and may be doing so many things, then one needs to be able to understand the inherent nature of these other stations as well. Right? So with that understanding, then one can see that wherever one is, that doesn't matter. It's, are you starting from your position and making it progressive? Does that make sense? So, for administration and for social running, therefore we put a hierarchy on the social structure. Right? Shudra is considered lower than a Vaishya, is lower than a Kshatriya, is lower than a Brahmin. But that's because of the nature of the administration of the system, or management of the system. But as far as devotional service go, it doesn't matter where you start from. The point is wherever you are, then you make the straightest possible line between your position and Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Right? That's what you're trying to do. So therefore there's no prestige. What happens is devotees on one side, when it's convenient, then, I mean, in other words, with others, they gotta get it together because you talk Daiva Varnashram, and even of that, you talk even basically running beyond Varnashram. But for ourselves, then we talk ordinary Varnashram. Right? So because of this, that is a problem. Oh, why should we bother about prestige? We're all devotees and this and that. We don't worry about that. You know, get beyond that. You know, preaching is like this. But for ourselves is, you know, I can't be the Shudra. You know what I'm saying? All it's saying is basically this. Varnashram's saying like this. That you have, means this would be, means, if you're looking at it socially, you have the common person, the general, everyday, what basically everybody is. That's the Shudra. Right? Not some low-class, disgusting, you know, terrible living entity. No, it's just the common, dated... When you go out on the street, what you're looking at is Shudras. Right? That's what you're looking at. Does that make sense? Now, from amongst that group, some of them know how to generate economics. Some know how to administrate and create a protected environment in which everybody else can function freely. And some know how to teach the Shastras and train people in the Brahminical culture. Right? So that's what makes Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmins. If it looks at it this way, then being a Shudra is fine. Because basically everybody's a Shudra except for a few people who are Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. Right? Means if you're using a devotional formula, then I've heard, though I haven't heard the numbers, but it's based off of a formula of 64. How it breaks down, I'm not sure. But you end up with a lot more Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. You know, the proportion's much higher that way. Well, if you're dealing with general society, non-devotional society is based off of 1,000. In a general society is 900 Shudras, 90 Vaishyas, 9 Kshatriyas, and 1 Brahmin. Right.
I heard a generous thing before, but this makes more sense.
No, but I'm saying there's two formulas. The one is if you're dealing in the Vaishnava society, because Brahminical culture is what everybody follows anyway, even if they happen to have an occupation as a Shudra. So, therefore, means the lower end Shudras generally have a tendency to not get too involved with such a social system. So your rate of Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas will be much greater like that. So the main thing is what we have here is that if it's not a prestige thing of what is my Varna or Ashram, then you can just get down to the reality of what it is I need to do to see that body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. Right? Now, we have to run, probably gives the example of Yudhishthir, I think it's in the first canto, where he's describing that as a king, and as a Kshatriya, therefore he has certain duties, and as a devotee he has certain duties. So it's like the train, the rails on a train, on a track, for a train, is that they run parallel. You do them both at once. But you don't compromise the devotional for the material. But at the same time if one's intelligent, one basically avoids compromising the... In other words, you don't compromise the spiritual for the material, but at the same time you don't compromise the material either. Does that make sense? So generally what we've done is compromised. We've been very careful to see that the material didn't compromise the spiritual, but we took no care to see that the material was also a solution wasn't found. So because of that, then so many difficulties are there. Right? So in this, it's a system. It means a Brahmin means he's going to study the scriptures. So to do that, he cannot be really involved in economics or administration. Right? Once he's trained, then he can be to some degree, but his major focus has to be on what are the scriptures and how to apply it. Right? And to see what is the best way that the most maximum amount of people will be benefited. So generally that means then advising senior members of the society. One, you'll advise anybody, but especially senior members, because they're the ones that deal with everybody, because Shudras work for a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya. So that means if you influence the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, that means all the Shudras will also be influenced. They will also be trained. So of that, but unless you train a Kshatriyas, then you won't have an environment in which Vaishyas can thrive. And without Vaishyas, you don't have economics. Right? So the first thing to do is establish the Brahminical culture and Brahmins. Brahminical culture everybody follows. It's a misnomer to think that there's such a thing as Brahmin culture, Kshatriya culture, Vaishya culture. No, in the Vedic system there's four Varnas, that there's only one culture. Ashram is there. Brahmacharya Grihastha Vanaprastha Sannyas. That's not according to the Varnas. You may have specific details according to the thing, but that's for everybody. You know, you're an older person, so therefore you have certain things that's expected. You know, if you're younger, then there's other things, but it doesn't make it a whole, it makes it a separate culture. It's just details within the, in the main. So there's only one culture, and that's the Brahminical culture. And that Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas all follow. Shudras also should follow. As devotees, because they are naturally situated in Brahminical culture, they follow it. But for the non-devotees, then the Shudras follow it or don't follow it, it's not so important as long as they perform their duties nicely, serving whoever they're serving. You know, this society will work. But as devotees, they're automatically, so it's common, even that those who do have an occupation as a Shudra will be following the Brahminical culture just as much as someone else.
You're saying Brahminical is at the exchange with Vaishnava, or what?
Brahminical means that it has the standard of following the Vedic literatures according to what is right and wrong activities, with the idea of elevation. Now, the perfection of elevation is devotional service. So therefore, for us, it means Vaishnav. But even for the non-devotees, it should be elevating. You know, it should be progressive. They should be going forward. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So the Brahmins do that, but then at the same time that's where their stop. They don't manage everything. They aren't the ones with the economics. They simply know the scriptures, know what should be done, and give the advice. Right? But according to their knowledge and abilities, they'll give advice in their particular areas. Someone is expert, let's say, in the Dharma Shastras, then they can advise the kings, right? You know, on how to manage the kingdom. You know, if their expertise is in astrology, they'll only give that advice. They won't go beyond that. You know, if they're, you know, Ayurveda is their thing, then they'll give advice according to that. They won't go beyond that. So in other words, the Brahmin, even though he's the top of the society, he knows where his limit is and stops there. Right? Kshatriyas take what the Brahmins say and practically apply it, that everybody in society is supposed to be following their position. So they give protection. They create an environment in which everybody could follow their natural duties, and the Kshatriya sees that they are. Right? As you said, whatever they claim to be, then they should do that. Does that make sense? Like that. And here it's by what's prominent. You know what I'm saying? A Brahmin may be prominently, you know, teaching or doing puja, but somehow on the other side he's doing business. That doesn't make him a businessman. He's a Brahmin who is supplementing his occupation by business. But if business becomes the prominent thing, and then he also does some puja and some yajna and like that, he's a Vaishya. It's whichever is the prominence. It's not that if there's any speck of business in there, then he's not a Brahmin. That also, this kind of modern concept of 100% or zero, or nowadays negative one, you know, or something, you know. It doesn't work. You have to be able to accommodate from 100 all the way down to zero. Then you can. That's broad-minded. You know, being it's 100% of nothing. That's narrow-minded. You know, narrow-minded can be anywhere, conservative or liberal. It doesn't matter. They're both narrow-minded. Broad-minded means you can accommodate all of them and understand that this is where this person needs to be, this is where that person needs to be. Okay, so then the Kshatriya sees that it goes that far, but that's where they stop also, because they don't do business. Right? Unless they have to. Right? Also, they don't do farming or these things, unless they have to. Then Vaishya means he does, and they must give charity, they must protect the people, so that the Vaishyas can prosper. They must take a tax that is enough, only enough that he can run the kingdom. At the same time, it doesn't overburden the people who are generating the funds, because Vaishyas are only excited when there's a serious return. So if there's a serious return and you take a little bit of it, that's all right. If you take too much, they lose their enthusiasm. They lose their enthusiasm, they don't generate money. If there's no money, the kingdom doesn't run. So they must be inspired. So therefore, they take a small amount of tax, and they take care of their dependents, their shudras, and they give charity to the Brahmins. Right. Then the Vaishyas, they themselves, then they are to generate economics, which is what they'll do anyway, and give in charity. So they pay tax, the appropriate tax for the Kshatriyas, and they give charity. Because they make all the money, so that's where all the money is, so it must be distributed. Just like all the power is with the Kshatriyas, it's distributed in the form of protection. The Brahmins have all the knowledge, that's distributed. Right? So in the same way. And so they give charity to the Brahmins, they give tax to the Kshatriyas, and they take care of the Shudras. And then the Shudras, they work for the benefit of whoever they work for. Right? So then, they're a well-wisher of who they work for. They work for the benefit of who they're working for. They are, deal properly and appropriately with everybody in the system of who they're working for. Let's say he has a company, so that means everybody in the company he deals properly with. And he tries to catch what is the mood of that particular company and try to push it forward. If he does that, then there'll be prosperity, because, the Vaishyas will make big money if they have help of the Shudras. If the Shudras act like real Shudras, then there'll be big money. Then everybody becomes prosperous. Right. So these things are just so that everyone knows what they're supposed to do and what's their relationship, like that. And you see, as everybody has a limit. No matter where they are, they have their rights, but they have their limits. The Brahmins, they can say anything to anybody, but that's where it stops. They can only say, right? And the Kshatriya is there, but it has to be according to religious principles, as you see Bhima here. And it must be that it's actually protecting and creating an environment in which the other person can perform his religious duties. Right? Just like the king, he's the top, but if somebody comes and criticizes the king, that for some wrongdoing, that person can't be punished for that. It has to be actually seen, is there something wrong? Just like that Brahmin who came, it was saying all kinds of stuff about, the Pandavas, because his sons were dying before him. That means something in the kingdom is not being managed properly. So he had the right to say that, and he couldn't be punished for that. Now, if it was proved that what they were saying is wrong, yes, of course, then they can be held for, speaking badly and all that. But otherwise, then not. If it's true, they can't be aligned. The king or his ministers and that can never start court cases. Court cases are for the people, they're not for the kingdom. So everybody has their authority, but has their limits. The Vaishyas don't, means he teaches business to another person, yes, but he doesn't get into education, because he'll make a business out of it. Right? Other than the village level, like that, small town, they don't act as the protectors of the society. Because they'll only protect according to money. You know what I'm saying? And the Shudras, they follow what they're told. They may be very expert. They can give advice, but still the call is who they work for. Yes?
The Brahmins, if there's only one Brahmin without a teacher, it's pretty hard for them to teach. If you have a school, it's a liminal school.
Yeah, but then the point is he's teaching Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. That means he only has to deal with 100 people.
If there's only one Brahmin, there's 1,000.
But I'm saying he doesn't teach the 900.
He doesn't teach them.
The Shudras teach themselves.
This
Because the Shudra learns an art, and you learn that from another artisan. So that's why you have guilds and everything like that. Because you can't, it means it's just like this. Let's say you go to an art school. That's nice. But as long as the school is made up of people who themselves are artists, and therefore decided to teach that to others, then you'll get somewhere. But if it's just a art school where somebody who majored in art and now they learned art from someone else who majored in art and that, then you're going to have people who are, let's say, rasiks of art or appreciators of art, but not actually artists. Right? So that's why the guild system was there, is you went and learned under a master artist. You didn't go to a school as such, unless that master artist was so good that he could teach many people at once rather than just by association. But that's rare.
The Prabhupada said initially in the Guru Prabhupada, Brahma should be able to teach everything.
Yeah.
Everyone. So they have to know all these
people. Means it's teaching means here as you're also talking about the there's two things there. One is that you're actually hands-on teaching. Is two things. One is academics, right? And the Brahminical, let's say, sciences and culture. You know, those arts are directly. Arts outside of that, then what Brahmins teach are what is the Shastric elements of it? What is the essence? What are you actually looking for? So that means a Brahmin could teach a musician music by showing what real music is. He doesn't teach him the notes, he doesn't teach him how to sing or play the instrument. If he shows them how, what is music, how it's coming from the Lord, how it's, what's the proper mood in approaching it, what is, you know, what actually makes the music. If someone has the right attitude, that's music. They don't have the right attitude, even though technically it's great, no one will appreciate the music. So what the Brahman is doing is creating the musician. And it's by learning from another musician, you'll get the technique. So that way then Brahmins teach the whole society. You know, because there is a mentality and understanding. Because knowledge, there's only one. Actually, knowledge is one. It's Krishna. It's just Krishna in different forms. Krishna says, "I am the ritual." So that means whatever there is, that's Krishna. That means there's a common element. So someone understands that, then they can speak on any subject, because they can see the connection between one thing and another. So generally, you'll find is they'll have been. One subject that they have, you know, majored in, that is the subject through which they've understood this universal principles. Then from that, they can go out. That's mastery. If they're expertise, they'll know their field very well, but won't necessarily be able to cross the borders between one discipline and another. But if they're a master of one discipline, they won't know the skills of another discipline, but they will actually know how that other discipline functions. So in other words, they can teach from the top.
Right.
You know, yeah, they can teach from the top. But from the bottom, no, that you have to learn from someone who's a master in that discipline, or at least an expert, like that. But even if you learn from an expert in the discipline, and then you learn from someone else who's a master, you could gain mastery over it, because then you understand what it is, even though the person in the discipline wasn't a master, you can gain that through another master, through a master in a different, you know, like that. So it's just like, you'll see, it's just like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So then, so that's the whole point. So the Brahmins, it's not just some puja and these other elements, these are there. These are like your most important. But Brahminical culture is a lifestyle. It's a way of thinking. It's a way of understanding. And when that's common amongst the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, means you have a complete culture. Because they all go to the Gurukul. Yes? Generally, you would try to avoid a fight between the two, because there's a natural respect. The Brahmin respects the Kshatriya because they have to get it done. So their pragmatic considerations have to be there. It means a Kshatriya, generally a fight will only come up because a Kshatriya is pragmatic. But their pragmatism is based on Shastra. Pragmatism is not based on Shastra, that's Vaishya. Right? But when it's based on Shastra, that's Kshatriya. So the Kshatriyas, because of the chivalry aspect, there's always a nature that they like to fight. They like to find fault and then create a, you know, some contention. It's just the way they are. The more septic they are, the less there is. Like in Yudhishthira, you don't see that. But in others, it's not uncommon. You understand? So, then, because of that, there, then if the Brahmin says something, though they know is intellectually correct, but they can't, they haven't explained in such a way that it's practical. Or at least it's not practical in the mind of Kshatriya. He didn't understand it. It may have been, but he just didn't understand it. Or it may be that the Brahmin, it didn't think it all the way to the ground. There'll be a challenge there. But if etiquette is followed, that argument just means that they point out that something was wrong there. Right? Does that make sense? So then, both have respect for each other. It doesn't turn into this modern where you completely forget who the other person is and what the relationship. You know, that's unfortunate. You know, because that's just due to kind of the Western background. You know, it's more common, I'd say, in the first world. You know, it's one of the side benefits of the first world. Your third world generally doesn't have. Relationships are more important than everything else. That's why it's sometimes it's seen the first world views the third world as more sentimental and not very consistent and not very reliable, because they will drop out of a particular endeavor if it will prove bad in a relationship. Well, the tendency is first generation won't. They have this, you know, they have things that they get by with. Does that make sense? They have, you know, like their hats. You know, you're best of friends, but then in a meeting they completely ripped you to shreds. Not in a nice way. Not always just I was wearing that hat. They have these nice little answers for that. Yes, you had something, you could have ripped it to shreds, but you could have also done it considering the relationship. But basically what you're really saying is, I did not have the intelligence or the sense control to actually do it in that way. You know, I'm a pragmatist, so I'm being pragmatic, and pragmatism, of course, is the ultimate religion. Right? So, it's because once you find the Brahmin Kshatriyas, they basically generally can't break that. It's very hard for them. It does come up sometimes, but it's generally attachment's the only thing that generally overwhelms. Attachment's basically all problems in the material world come from attachment. Everything goes back to that. That's why detachment is recommended. But this detachment should never be misunderstood that it means the non-performance of duties. Right? That's the impersonal concept. The jnani, he's not attached, therefore he does no karma. And the karmi is attached, therefore he does karma. But the Vedic system, actual naishkarmya, it means the middle path, is that you have no attachment, but it's your duty to perform it. Right? And your duty to perform it, then we accept, okay, you should perform the duty, but then that will be dry and boring and no one will have their heart in it. But then it's just like this. An actor, they play a part in the drama. So, do they play that part well? What I'm saying? The person is supposed to play a particular person in the drama. So they do that well? Yes. Then they're called a good actor. Does that make sense? So that means your performance of your duty includes that you have to perform it to the best of your ability, whether you want to or not. Right? Does that make sense? The mother is sitting there at home, her whole world's falling apart, she's completely freaked out and, you know, like that, and then the kids come home. And then she doesn't come out and making all kinds of a scene and rolling on the ground. Otherwise, kids would be completely freaked because they don't understand these things in the adult world. And she just comes out and she's nice and takes care of them and feeds them and sends them off to a room. Then she goes back to her room and falls apart again. Right? So one could say that's artificial. But if we're looking at relationships, it's not artificial. That's real. Coming out and you're Grendel's mother in your room, and then when the kids come home, then you're Grendel's mother out in the living room, that's artificial. Because that's not your relationship. Your real relationship is mother and child. So therefore, mother behaves like this, child like this. So that's real. But that's the thing, is Gita says, religion becomes irreligion, irreligion becomes religion. So the modern day, they're claiming just show it. That's natural. But if everybody just showed, it's wild. Because if everybody just does what they want, why does it stop there on the emotional platform? That, why isn't, I like your car, I just take it. You know? I like your wife, I just take it. I like your house, I just take it. Because that's the full, that would be full modern liberality. Just what you feel, just do it. Hold yourself. Yeah, what you feel good, do it. Don't restrict yourself. Yeah, don't repress yourself. But the point is according to their particular narrow-minded scope of values, then they'll say, don't in this area restrict yourself, but in other areas they don't. You know, the psychologist is sitting there telling, oh, don't restrict yourself. And then you walk out of the office and start chatting up his wife out in the hallway. I don't think the psychologist would back you up on that. You know? Oh, very good. Now you're really learning. You're progressing very well now. I can see, you know, you're just letting it all happen. No, it won't happen like that. So it's only that somebody has, you see that so-called liberalists, if you look at it, actually they only have a very small circle of areas where they actually are liberal. But because they identify with it so strongly, they consider they're liberals. But actually they're just as conservative as conservatives, but just their areas of liberality are different. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so it's just a different value system. You know, it's just like this. Okay, let's say, just to take one here, we'll do a nice little spin on it. Let's say someone in the family does something wrong, seriously wrong. So now the liberal on one side may look at it that, okay, they did this and these things happen, but at the same time, as you know, truth must be told and you know, we must, you know, go to the proper authorities. Right? Because that's all part of truth. While the conservative, you know, they may put you on the back burner in their relationships, but because it's family and all that, it doesn't leave the family. So then in this, which one's the conservative, which one's the liberal? Which one was personal, which one was not? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole problem with this modern duality of conservative and liberal. Because if you take either one or the other, you can move it. So that's why the Vedic is that both are correct in their proper application. In one situation, you would apply the so-called conservative values. In another application, you would apply the so-called liberal values. Right? It's just like you find out your child is doing all varieties of nonsense. So liberal might be, oh, it's okay and like that, and we don't want to be fanatic and all that, and the kid will go to hell. And the kid won't respect the parent for that liberal. Like, it means if you look at it, most kids that have real strong respect for their parents, deep respect, generally come from conservative or religious backgrounds. They don't come from liberal backgrounds. It's not a common element of liberal backgrounds that kids are known to really respect their parents right on through, teenage years. You know, maybe when they hit 30 and they got kids growing up and they see then they go, oh, that's what my parents were trying to do. But it generally, there's a gap between 10 years old and there's a 20-year gap until from they were nice up to 10, and then when they figure out that you weren't such a bad guy after all at 30. Right? You know, does that make sense? Yeah, so the conservative and liberal, this element is that you have to know what is what. So that's why we need to have the Shastra. The Shastra gives what is the field. Then that's not enough, because the field is very varied. Right? So then you have to know what the Acharyas say, so we know specifically for us. You know, like here, like we were saying there, the child is there. So therefore then we see, okay, they're at that point. Then it's not a matter of their nonsense, this, that. They are nonsense. What they're doing is nonsense. But now, what are we going to do about it? So then it's a matter of, okay, you want to deal in this area. What's the reality of that? You know what I'm saying? It's like this. Okay, they're single, they're unmarried. And so then it's a matter of they're not supposed to get involved with the opposite sex, right? And so then you find that they are. So now, you know, then you get conservatives will get very angry, yell, scream, this is nonsense, this has got to stop, and that. So in one sense, it's correct. Liberal will look at it, okay, it's all right, so then, you know, it happens to everybody. Hey, I grew up like that, so it's not such a big deal. But both are right, but at the same time, both are wrong. Not making such a big deal out of it, that's correct. But that it's wrong and shouldn't be done, that's also correct. So then it's a matter of, okay, you want to get involved with the ladies. Do you actually know what ladies are? This is what it is. You want to get involved. This is what they're expecting. You're thinking, oh, just a cute girl, having a good time, you hold hands, you know, if we can see it, we can sneak off into some bush somewhere, and it's all good, clean fun. But the girl's not thinking like that. The girl's already thinking of house, marriage, you know, what the kid's going to be like, you know, how we're going to dress the kid, what school they're going to go to. That's the way the girl's thinking. And this answers your question, because from puberty, that's how they think. Girls in one day go from girls to women. There's no, Britney Spears is just, she's getting money off the song, but it's not reality. You know, so the whole point is it's just they found out that they're a woman, but then they found out they haven't been trained to be one. Because the modern liberal culture doesn't train a girl as a woman until she becomes one. And even then, only when things get serious. And even then, possibly not. You know? Yeah. Well, the Vedic is you're being trained as soon as you can communicate. You know? It means like this. I saw one family. High-grade Brahmin family. Generally, like, there's always like four levels of Brahmins, so this is from the top one. As soon as they could communicate, which basically means from two, then anything that's culturally wrong, not that they do something stupid, but culturally improper, then they would make the point that a chaste girl doesn't do this. So then chastity becomes a concept of appropriate activity. Because that's actually what chastity is. This idea is that, okay, the guy did not have vaginal sex, therefore I am chaste, is not really the Vedic concept. Chastity is a mindset. So, and this other one is just a detail of that. So then, from that time, then they associate proper behavior according to proper etiquette, according to Shastra, according to religious principles as chastity. Then, when they hit puberty, then that other added element is then given to complete the picture. Then they actually will be. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is that something as important as cooking. Because cooking, how you say, every kids love nice food. Men love nice food. And women love nice food. So that means if you can cook good, Your kids are going to be happy. Your husband's going to be happy. In any kind of social functions that you have, they'll all be happy. Right? Because women like to have husbands, they like to have kids, and they like social interaction. Right? And there's nothing more that you could do about it than that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I'm saying it's a guaranteed relationship with any living entity on the planet. Right? Even the animals will like you. Right? And because you know, enough food, then there's always food left out. Animals are getting, you know, the trees are getting, you know, so it's everybody's getting. So it's the one thing that automatically a woman has a relationship with everyone on the planet. In such a way that it's not compromising her feminine nature. There's no exploitation. Right? Does that make sense? So then from a young age, they're taught, well, they'll hang out in the kitchen, but from a young age, they start to be taught in cooking. Right? And then whatever else are the natural skills of the house, they learn. Right? That's according to ability. Prabhupada mentions in training girls is that most important is cooking, then cleaning, and then sewing if it's there. It can be there or not. It's a really good thing, but if they don't know it, it's okay. Then fourth is whatever other bodies of knowledge according to their individual nature. Right? That's what they should be learning. So if a girl is very academic, then she should be learning it. But only because, not because she's a girl, but because she's academic. Right? It's not automatic because she's a girl, she does this, that, and no, because she's a girl, she learns this cooking, cleaning, and sewing. Right? Yes?
Everything you're saying is based on common sense, logic, and practicality.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, because this is Shastra. The Shastra, the essence of the Shastra is very practical, but what happens is that's what I was saying before, is that we've tried Varnashram, it didn't work, means we didn't actually penetrate through into the core. Because once you get down to the core, it is the most practical, straightforward, personal, nice system. You know, it's like this. Someone who's like here, who's a Vedic, someone who's 90 years old, anybody, it doesn't matter what Varna they're from, is automatically respected by everyone in the society. Like that. You're walking down a road and there's a pregnant woman coming the other way. You move. You know? You're coming down the road and somebody is carrying a burden, you know, on their head or something heavy, so they're just focused on that. You move. You don't make them move. And we're talking about Brahmins. They'll move. Right? You know? So, things like this. You're going down the road and there's a vehicle coming the other way. You move. You know, it's very practical, that one. You know, so there's all kinds of stuff like this, so it's just that you know the situation. But now that same shooter is not carrying, you know, 80 kilos of cauliflower on his head, he moves for you. So it's only because he's carrying the burden like that. But he respects you because of your position, so therefore he's humble in his inability to move. Means he would move, but the better thing is for you to move. It's easier for someone without a burden to move aside than someone with. Even though, so he should be in the mood to move, but he doesn't have to because the senior person moves.
You see that, they acknowledge that you move.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that. So that whole thing is that you offer that respect, and that respect is reciprocated. Right? So like that. So all that's there. So the Vedas get into that, all these different persons who you move, and then if they all come together at one place, like that. So as far as hierarchy goes, then you have all these people, a rich person, a powerful person, the king, you know, a snataka, you know, the Brahmin, like this. Then if it all comes together at one place at one point, then they'll all move aside for the king, because the king's got the biggest thing happening. But if it's between the king and the snataka, then the king will move aside. You know. But as a general thing, it's like this. You would know, let's say the Brahmin's going down the road, the king's coming out in all his, you know, regalia. You move. because when he's out in that mood, he's got an attitude, and it's serious. But it's good. It's hard to imagine somebody being a king that you have more wealth or more power than. You know, the king means he's got more wealth and power than anybody, so that's why he's king. So that works very naturally. So then, but at the same time, if that person, that Brahmin on the road, is way bigger than the king, or the king's got something wrong that the Brahmin's trying to prove something to him, the king's got to move. Like that. So we see that. You know, it's like, I think the king was going down the road. I think there's two occasions. One was Astafakra Muni, and the other one, Yamunacharya. Yeah. I think both of them used the same thing. The king was going out, you know, with the whole, you know, army, and they're walking down the highway the other way, right in the middle of the road. And, you know, then the guys in the front come up and say, the king's coming, please move. And they said, no, the road belongs to the Brahmins. It's our road. He should ask us that, you know, he wants to use our road. So they go back and tell the king. And the king comes forward, gets off his seat, comes in. And these are 8-year-old kids, right? You know, Astavaki Muni and Jumunacharya when they were kids, right? You know, yeah, like this big, you know. And they come and say, you know, like this, you know, first ministers come and try and this and that, says, no, it's our road. Tell him to move. So then they understand these kids, there's something happening here. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing this. So the king comes and says what it is. And says, so both of them, we want to be able, because they were kids, they wouldn't let them argue with their court logician. Because the stakes were very high. You know, with Astavakra Muni, it means whoever's defeated by the court logician gets drowned in the ocean. So, you know, they won't let a kid do that. So he said, you know, it's like, you know, I argue with him, or you don't go, you turn around. You know, so they can see this kid meant business. So then he got his audience. So Jumunacharya, I'm not sure what the thing was there, but it was a big debate. So then, that's how they got in. So generally it wouldn't be used. You would always defer to these things because you would count yourself out of that circle. But if there's a need for etiquette, then you would pull it. You know, does that make sense? So that's all these rules have their time, place, and circumstances. Very, very. So if you understand the principle on which it works, that's why I'm saying the principles are most important. Then the whole system is much easier to practice. It will take time, because anything to do takes practice. Because you hear it, that's knowledge, that's shravana. Then you must apply it, and from that application, questions will come up. Then you contemplate it according to what you've heard, and then try to work out what it is that, you know, either went right or went wrong. And if you can figure it out, great. If not, you go back to where you heard the knowledge from. And then there's more shravana, then again, you go to apply it. So this, then eventually it comes to where then there's realization. Because you've practiced it so long, then you realize what it's for and how it works, and then it becomes part of your life. Like that. So that's how education, that's the Vedic education, is that formula. Is those three stages. Yes. You have to, if you don't live it, it's not considered education. Academic education means, even though the Vedic academic is, you know, the most refined and detailed there is, but it's not considered education if character's not there. You know, like that. So that's why the emphasis is on character. Like, to learn one of the Vedas doesn't take so long, doesn't take 12 years. But because the student will do so much menial service and sadhana to develop the character along with the academics, therefore it's given that much time. Like that. Yeah, because without that, then how will they function? If you're not humble, you're not going to make it in the forest, because the animals will be disturbed. You know, if you're humble, you won't bother them, and they'll leave you alone, you'll leave them alone. If you're out in the human society, if you're not humble, no one will function. In your family, if you're not humble, you can't function. So, you have to know humility. And you have to have a service attitude. If you're not active no relationship will work, because it's the action within the relationship in which result and experience is gained. Experience here meaning not experience means skill. Experience here means the experience, the feeling of it. So it's only through action that the pleasant experience and the result are gained. The external practical result. So action must be there. So that's why humility, that humility and menial service, they're combined. So menial service makes you humble and develops action. That's why it's emphasized so much. Modern academy will think it's a waste of time. They could be doing more classes, more homework. Yes, but then the problem is they won't have the character. And because they don't have the character, you will find the same amount of time will be spent, at least, up through, up through your graduation, will be spent in recreation. And funnily, the modern academy will think that's okay. If the kids, study hard in the classroom, study hard in their homework, and then for 3 hours, then they, play, then they won't mind. But still, that time is wasted. But in the Vedic, it means they have to play because the other is so intense, it doesn't actually have a technical connection with their life. So unless it's a skill, it's a music school or something like that, it's what they want to do. So then it itself is like a sadhana, so it's not a problem. It is hard work. But if it's just only academic, then without that, then their capacity to learn also is by service, by application of the knowledge, then the capacity to absorb more of that knowledge is increased. So it's a very, very scientific system that takes into consideration the psychology of the student.
So the inquiry is again.
Yes. Yeah. Means you'll inquire, therefore then you'll learn, therefore then you can practice to a more developed degree. Then that will create more inquiry, more desire to learn, which will include me. So the pranipata party prashna sevaya, it goes in a circle like that. It just keeps increasing. So that's why the Vedic puts so much emphasis on that. So it would appear that not much is happening. But what's happening, it's real. You don't have to redo. It's a different kind of system. It means, one, you only teach what you'll actually use anyway. So right there, that cuts down vastly the body of knowledge. Then you're going to be studying it for less time because you're doing sadhanas and menial service. And then you'll be doing a lot of repetition, but that repetition isn't boring because the repetition comes in deeper and deeper degrees of application. Right? You're more and more understanding how your subject matter connects to the principles that it's all working on.
So you're a teacher and you're seeing, wasted time because their nature is not quite what they need. So as a teacher, it would be good to pull them and shift them in the direction that they're naturally drawn towards.
Yeah, no, that's what you do. It means you have to bring out the nature. The Vedic system is by doing that and by the discussions, because of that environment, is you try to create an environment of reality. Therefore, then the actual nature of the individual kid will be seen. So in the properly applied Vedic educational system, then every student in the school and in the classroom will be unique. That's why they generally use tutorial system rather than the lecture system, because they're all different. You can give general philosophy, you can do general, but when you're getting into skills in that, it has to be individual. Because everyone will move at their own degree and own like that, and what combinations and everything. So then that actually makes it harder. Well, the modern academy, to make it easier, they try to keep everybody as like-minded as possible. So if you go into a classroom, they're all the same. So that's how you can see. Is when they come in, they're all, different crazy little kids, but when they come out the other end, then they're nicely packaged and they all look the same. But in the Vedic, then the longer they're in the system, the more individual they become. Like that, because then because the point is self-realization. They should know who they are as an individual. And if you can understand who you are as an individual, then the second stage is understand who everybody else is. This is also a mistaken application, is we're very expert at what everybody else should do. Like you ask, you know, the general thing is you could ask, you know, the temple president what all the temple devotees are supposed to do. He'll know that frontwards and backwards. But what he's supposed to do, that's another thing. Or you ask the men what the women, you know, should be doing in the marriage relationship. They can run it right off. But if you ask, well, what are you supposed to be doing? Then they'll go, I don't know. And vice versa. The women will say, men should do this. Well, what are you supposed to do? So, but that's supposed to be the second stage. The first is know what you should do. Once you know what you're supposed to do, if you can understand what you should do, you can also then see it in others and teach it to others. If you can't see yourself, you can't teach others who they are. So does that make sense? Yeah. So you understand who you are. Second stage is understand who everybody else is and what's your relationship with them. Then someone who can understand that, then they can go to the third stage, is how to manage that system. But devotees generally tend to try to jump in. They start at the second. They don't even bother really with the first, unless it's my rights. You know, then they'll know the first. But otherwise, they'll jump in at the second. That's how they manage everybody else. And then they'll try to do the third. But actually, only someone who can do the first stage can get to the second and third. Because if you don't know who you are, how you know how everybody else is in the temple? He's just like this. If I'm a temple president and I have some vision of what I want to do with this yatra, then it's probably going to be a lot broader than what it is today. You know, there's so many programs and preaching elements that I want to establish in the temple, you know. So now we will naturally then, for what facility we have now and persons that we have now, I will make a plan, and I will move towards that. Now, if I really have that plan and understand nature, that people act according to their nature in the best way, now let us say I've decided, you know, I'm going to go through this, you know, A, B, C, D, like this, until I get all 10 of my projects in place. But now let us say I'm on A, and then someone comes along who their ability is C. Now, let's say there's some emergency. I can engage that person in A for a short time. But actually, if I was intelligent, I would start that person developing C. Right? Because I made my plan off of the field that is the field today. But now the field's changed because now I have a person who can do plan C. But generally, most will, no, this is what you have to do first, and then they'll lose that person. And in fact, most everybody doesn't fit into plan A. So therefore, generally you find in most temples, they lose everybody. Right? There's a 3-year turnover of 5 devotees. You know? Like that.
You know, it's sort
of the whole
society
of Americans. Yeah. Yeah. That's a big... You heard? You know, it says... You're making the point is in American society, you see that, is that you go to school and learn one thing, but when you go out to get a job, you have to do something completely different, so no one is actually satisfied. You know? Less well, the Vedic concept is that what it is that you like to do is what you should be doing. You know? So someone's doing carpentry because he likes carpentry. You know, someone's doing music because that's what they like. Someone's teaching because that's what they like. You know, it might be some emergency you fill in here and there, but you only go into something because that's really what you want to do. Then you'll do it the best. So that's the whole idea. That's why the Brahmins don't get involved in economics or the Kshatriyas. Because that's not what you can... The best thing you can get out of them is not that. Vaishya, he, you know, eats, sleeps, drinks economics. Right? A Brahmin won't do that. If his field is economics, like Arthashastra, but still that will be balanced around his own sadhana and everything else. But a Vaishya can take it where his economics is his sadhana. Like that. While the Brahmin, like you see, Chanakya still will perform his brahminical duties. You know, his puja and his different things like that. And then, when it's time for studying Shastra or explaining Shastra or giving advice, then it will be in the area of artha, of economics. Like that. So it's going to be less. Therefore he advises, but he doesn't do it. Does that make sense? Yes.
In our world, the modern world, let's say someone who tills the land is considered, would be considered a Vaishya sort of farmer. But according to the description, he would actually be a shudra.
No, it depends on his mentality. Is means you're confused on whether farming will be a Vaishya or Shudra. Is what is his motive? Is it because of the gain that will be gotten?
If he is working for a Vaishya, simply doing what he is told.
Yeah, then he's a Shudra.
Or a salesman,
He's a Shudra. He's a Shudra.
What about the soldier?
He's a Shudra.
The administrative staff.
He's a they're Shudras. That's why we say 900 are Shudras.
But if those people developed the skills and the ability to, you know, like in our society, the traveling salesman who wanted to have his company.
But if he does, no, here's like this. May become, but then he will become. It's just like this.
So there's room for Shudras to become?
It would be like this. It's not that Shudras become. It means he was a business person, but he started off from the bottom, right? If you go, they did a survey of the CEOs in companies in America. And basically they found is all the CEOs, I think maybe you told me this. CEO means he's the
executive.
Yeah, he's the one who manages the company. He's like the chairman of the managing committee. So he actually calls the shots, takes the responsibility. So most CEOs were the ones that started at the bottom of the company, right? You know, the cleaning boys and serving the tea and the, you know, guys that just deliver things, the runaround guys. Then they moved up, then they got something, then they became supervisor for that, then they became, and that's how they became the CEO. The guys that go to the business schools and they get the business degrees, you know, the MBAs and all that, they come into middle management, they don't start on the bottom, and they stay in middle management. Right? Because there's a difference here.
Some companies have a system where you come in for 2 years, and you actually start at the bottom. You learn every trade and every activity and the whole thing, and you circulate 2 months, 3 months in this job, that job, and then after 2 years, they evaluate where you're going to be.
But that's
even after MBA.
But that's the brain of a Vaishya to do that. It's a practical brain. Because Vaishyas look at what's real. Vaishyas hire, two guys come into the room and both have equal resumes, right? Now, and there's 100 of them. Sometimes the guy that they choose for the job is the guy that when he was talking on the phone paid attention, didn't open his briefcase and start looking at his Playboy magazine. Or when he left the room, he closed the door. Because the Vaishya knows, him I can train. Well, the other guy, you're not going to be able to train. So he's good, so if I need a guy and that only that much, I'll hire him. But if I'm looking for more than that, I'll take the other guy I can train, even though his qualifications are less. Like that. So people, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas look for reality.